which I just found, something which I just learned about. So, very traditionally or very classical approach to explore, to understand the emptiness of self is to look at the so-called four khandhas, these four heaps, which basically include everything we take to construct the self out of it. And I won't go into this. I want to make a connection with what I actually want to share with you. And these four khandhas often translated at heaps, our body, feeling, mental fabrication, perception, and consciousness. And again, there are practices where you really look at each of these heaps, these helpful delineations, and you look for the unchanging self. And behold, you won't find it. But it's really a very, very smart way to actually divide this experience up or this self so that never nothing gets left behind. And then again, very classically looking at the body, and if you have been around a little bit, you might have heard talks about the not self of body, deconstructing it in this way. It's ever changing. When we actually look deeper, we don't have control about it. It's also weird if we cut our hairs or cut our nails. When do they cease to be self, and when do they become not self? And as a person who might have maybe a limb amputated, do they have less sense of a self or less? So just like really this looking at where is the self here to be found. And what I heard in a documentary, and I said never, they said actually 90% of the human body, 90% of the human body cells are actually non-human. That can't be. So I looked it up. So on the Autoimmunity Research Foundation, they said 90%, and this is something really new discoveries, of all cells in the human body are bacterial, fungal, or otherwise non-human. The number of non-human genes, it's like is in the millions, and then the millions. Compared to the human genome, which is like 23,000. And they go on, they said some researchers now actually look at our guts, and they say, one could see the guts, like there is a diversity of bacterial species, which is like the diversity of a rainforest. Like there are 40,000 different bacteria in the guts, and they have, I think, something like 9. I wrote it down. 9 million unique bacterial genes, and 100 trillion microbial cells. And I was just sitting with this when I first heard this, and it can be a little bit, ooh, but God, this again can be such a beautiful perception, I'm this very complex system of ten thousands of life forms cooperating. There isn't anything I can say, that's me. So I just wanted to share this. I don't know if this has the same effect, but I somehow can't get my head around it. I find it fascinating, and I find it also a little bit weird. It's like, ooh, don't know if I like this. But also, there's also something, again, I just said a little bit with this earlier today, there's also something really liberating in this. God, this really knows how to work, this complex system, this complex organism. You know? Wow! And we know so little, we know so little. And it's so different, again, it's so different from our perception of ourselves. It's so different. Anyway, mysterious. So I like this, and I don't like it at the same time, this thought. You know, and I just said, you know, there was also a sense of feeling liberated. You know, there was some, oh, wow, that's so much more mysterious, complex, you know, than when I'm completely caught up in the stories of me, mine, and I. And I think this is one of the benchmarks, a very important benchmark of engaging with the teachings on emptiness, is not to come with, oh, it's all empty. Oh. You know, it doesn't have this, but there is always something, you know, when we are really engaging with them in the right way, there's always a sense of release, of sense of more possibility, of freedom. And I think also actually of awe, of wonder, of mystery. Wow. 40,000 bacterial species in my gut alone. Yeah. So there is a wow. It's not like, oh, it's empty. It's, oh, there's a wow. There's nothing inherently unchanging, fixed. And this is why I got so excited with the teachings of emptiness, because suddenly, you know, the world, which I perceived as quite fixed, the fixedness of things opened up, became much more fluid. You know, and with this increased fluidity, there was a real sense of relief, of freedom. You know, and instead of maybe having the sense I had to repair like a faulty entity, actually, the pointer was again and again, whatever arises, again, that's one strand of it, many, many different ways of doing it. But one which was very liberating for me many years ago, was I don't have to take it that personal. I don't have to wrap a whole identity around it and make me whatever it is. And this was partly the reason behind, you know, when I just asked you, hands up, who felt like this, you know. And you see, God is actually a really common arising, these mind states, and I will say a little bit more about them later, you know, of tiredness. I don't have to make an identity out of it. I'm such a restless person, or whatever it might be. Oh, it's like this is something we experience, comes and goes, and so forth. I don't have to limit myself here. I don't have to take that what is arising to construct a neatly dense self-image, self-view out of it. And of course, you know, I as well still do it. It can be so habitual. And I think, again, what really excited me also with the teachings on emptiness, that there was really this invitation to question. And this is one of the beautiful aspects which attracts me. You know, that I find myself suddenly invited, you know, to challenge even my most unquestioned assumptions, beliefs, any preconceptions I might have about myself, other, the world, even how I may habitually see, hear, sense the world. Before I continue, I just want to check in. Are you okay with my level of English? Yeah? Just if not, just let me know. And again, with this questioning, you know, again, we might sit with it differently at different times. You know, sometimes I can get really excited about it. Everything is, can be questioned. And sometimes, especially when I'm feeling more tender, more shaken, you know, I don't find it that great. I want to have certainties. You know, it's like something to trust, something to rely on. You know, thank you very much. Opening, questioning. And to really be tender here. You know, and also to really see that actually, again, the benchmark is increasing freedom, is increasing joy, creativity. And again, always staying attuned. What is helpful right now? What is helpful right now? Sometimes to question something is in a moment not the most helpful. I really just want to put this out. So, oh, actually now I really need this more sense of some kind of certainty. I know ultimately it might not be true, but this is where I actually need to rest right now with my being. Does it make sense when I'm saying this? Yeah. Because sometimes we can, then it becomes a new should. I have to question everything. Everything. It's like just check in, go gently. And what is also really important, you know, that this questioning is not a closed down questioning. Do you know this in yourself? When you sometimes you question, but actually it's not really open at all. You know, I can't think of a good example right now. The only thing which comes up right now is like, what you are doing then? You know, it's actually a statement. It's not, it's fueled of some dismissing. It's fueled with some disregard, with actually a closing down, has a deflating quality. It's also not a questioning that wants to have clear answers, but it's an exploration, ongoing exploration, ongoing exploration, where we can actually really allow ourselves to be again and again amazed and full of awe. And something we might discover are also the areas where we don't dare to question anymore, where we have closed down. You know, when we are in our habitual grooves. This is just how it is. Again, I'm folding my hands, my arms, like this is just how it is. Where we perceive ourselves, other surroundings in a very predictable, limited way. Where we fixed, where we have fixed. Where we hold back. We don't dare to go. And again, to be sensitive here, to be kind, compassionate here. I love this story. You might have heard it from me before. When they built the big Hadron Collider in Switzerland, you know, where they shoot this small particles around to find the Higgs boson. I think they found it now, I think. And they asked one of the scientists, you know, that, yeah, and when you find it, what will it mean? Something along these lines, you know. Will you have some answers, you know? And the guy answered something along the lines, yes, we have some answers, but most exciting that we will have new questions. So it's not an ending. It's not an ending to this. And you have new questions. And I love this. And of course, you know, like you all question, investigate to some extent, absolutely, absolutely. No, because we are all, we could say we are on a journey where we hopefully less and less approach life and world as something which is already finished and fixed and we are just dropped into it. You know, and then we bumble along. So I started with this and I just want to pick it up a little bit, just dip a little bit more into it and really just really on the surface, going a particular trajectory with it, this notion of self. You know, if you have been around a little bit, you hear terms like self, not self, no self, emptiness of self, and so forth. I just want to go in a very particular avenue down here, how to maybe get a sense or deepen a sense of this. So when we sit down, what we find is one aspect of our humanness is that we all have a range of different qualities, different shapings of mind and heart. And one could say, like the so-called five hindrances, the four qualities I asked you earlier, if you experience them today, they are mind states, restlessness, mind of body, states of body, mind and heart, tiredness, grasping, aversion, doubt. There are five, one of a whole range of mental states, mental dynamics. What is really interesting, and this can be so, so helpful in your practice here, when they arise, rather than seeing them as a problem, really becoming aware, oh, they have arisen, there is tiredness, there is aversion. With it, I arise accordingly, and the world and how I view the world, myself and everything will arise accordingly. The presence of the mind state, let's say of aversion, will color whatever I perceive, if I'm not conscious of it. And then I will believe the story of the mind state, called aversion. And part of our practice is not that they should not arise. This can, of course, this is, you know, it's a possibility, but for now, but to really see when they have arisen and having enough space to see them in ways that one could say, I'm taking now on a particular filter to look at everything in my experience, which will be colored by this mind state, and therefore it's good not to believe the story I'm telling me here. There is already some freedom around it. So the insight is there is a mind state, self, other world arises according to it, shapes it in a particular way. And then if we don't take care that will shape the very person, I will shape the very way I'm experience myself, and then I identify with it. I become it. Have you recognized this? Yeah. Good. Very, very good. It's really important. I know that some of you have been really around. For some of you, for many of you, this is well-traveled territory. So the interesting thing is, you know, again, what we can see, but we can explore again and again, you know, when we have a certain situation and we have a real statement about it, this is how it was. You know, this is how it was. Different mind state. I look at the same situation when there is more sense of warmth, of compassion, of openness, of softness. If there is more anger, stress, the narrowing down of stress, will actually appear in different ways. I will interpret them in different ways. So we can reflect on the same situation in different moods, and according to our mood mind state, compassion may arise, shame and embarrassment may arise, anger, gratitude, appreciation, or nothing at all along this line, quite neutral. We can see ourselves, or we can see the situation, as an expression of success and failing, of good and bad. Or we can even at times come to a place where we look at a situation which was maybe before seen in the way of success, failure. God, I really, really failed there. Or this was really great how I did this. Where actually where this duality doesn't actually make any sense anymore. Doesn't actually make sense. You know, especially when we are more like in a spacious, what we call like a more equanimous mind state. Doesn't, the world doesn't arise in this way. So one could say, you know, how the quality of our citta, of our mind, heart, mind, changes, and with it, you know, changes what is arising here, our perception of past and future, the whole world is arising differently. And how are we to say which one is a true perception? This is the one which how it was. Can't do this, we can't do it. And this is again points to emptiness. And I find it fascinating, I find it utterly fascinating to also really see in this how my coloring literally shaped what is arising. You know what we mentioned several times, I think Subhadra said something. It with, we see the world arise. I mean, I don't know exactly your wordings, but something very much along this line. And we have this tendency, to attach an identity, we make ourselves then this whatever the mind state is. I'm an angry person, I'm a depressed person, I'm a very, very relaxed, well-organized person, or whatever it may be. You know, depending a little bit which one of our inner voices has the loudest, is the most dominant right now. You know, so the self arises depending out of mind states, the shape of the citta, and this is equally influenced by the season, by the food we ate, by the light, the absence of light or not light, time of day, age, health, and a whole other host, you know, which government is running the country right now, and. So actually, when we look closer, we see what we perceive as this maybe at times solidified self. Again, one way of seeing it, you know, again, that's also not the ultimate truth. We can see that the self is in flux, and here we are, and we meet other selves in flux. And in our meeting, we influence and shape each other. Forever shifting, forever changing. And of course, you know, very understandably, we may ask in ourselves, which one is a true self? You know, when people very often come to retreat, actually one hears it less now, but I want to find my true self. And it's a beautiful endeavor. It means, oh, actually, I really want to be a little bit more updated here. You know, I feel like I'm always just responding, reacting to demands, inner and outer. So I really want to connect with what is true for me. That's a beautiful, beautiful endeavor. You know. But actually, when we really believe in the existence of the true self, which is there to be found, then we are somehow misled, you know. And actually, again, the teachings find quite an ingenious response to this, you know, that is actually the wrong question. What is my true self? And apparently, when asked, the Buddha avoided to answer the question if there is a self, a true self, or a not self. He never actually answered it. He avoided to define self. And a more helpful question might be, is to find out how do I construct self that is helpful and how do I construct self that is not helpful. And this will change according to context. So Ajahn Thanissaro, he says, we can view our sense of self as an activity, a process. It's something we do and something we can learn to do more skillfully. At the same time, we look at our sense of what's not self, which is also an activity, and learn how to do that more skillfully too. He doesn't say one is better or worse than the other. He continues. We engage in different perceptions of self all of the time and have been doing so ever since we were children. We have many different perceptions of self. Each sense of self is strategic, a means to an end. Each comes with a boundary inside of which is self and outside of which is not self. And so our sense of what's self and what's not self keeps changing all the time depending on our desires. So this is more looking in terms of sense of self, in terms of, you know, boundaries where it ends and where others starts. And again, when I was thinking about this talk, what came to my mind was when actually Suvacho and I met first. So I was cycling from Brighton to Gaia House to raise some awareness around climate change. And we passed Hartridge Monastery, where Suva Cho was still living as a monk. And Suva Cho approached me as another non-English person and said, I would like to speak with you about what does it mean to be a foreigner in this country here, in the UK. So again, I hope it's okay for Suva Cho that I just, you know. So we geared ourselves up in creating some otherness, some us and otherness. Oh, these English people. Oh my God. Yes, yes, yes. I know exactly what you mean. And, you know, and there was like a creating of us, and then there was a creating of an otherness. Yeah. Two foreigners in now Brexit UK. And then traveling together, you know, just really looking at this in this way, you know, me entering Germany, coming to my home country, you know, something is relaxing, you know, some level of even unconscious othering is actually appeased, subsiding a little bit. And I have always this feeling when I'm coming to mainland Europe, there is something goes to me, and I love, by the way, I love living in England. It's not that I goes like, oh, got finally back on mainland Europe. Oh, really feels like this. So I'm as different, a slightly different self is created. You know, then we travel to different countries, you know, in different constellation, and just looking in terms of where does self end and other stuff was constantly shifting. And probably when you look at the day today, it also happened probably quite a lot. Yeah. And it's nothing wrong with this. We are doing this all the time. Yeah. Here we are practicing together. Here we are. Oh, lovely. Yeah. Will they like my talk? Do they get bored? Oh, they might dislike me. Oh, you. Me here. Immediately has an effect. Immediately has an effect. So we do this all the time, and all too often we do it without being conscious of it, and actually then believe what we are telling us. And Ajahn Taniso, continues as your sense of yourself, of what is yours and not yours, has shifted, is shifting all the time. This line between self, not self, has been changed. And you have been doing this sort of thing, changing the boundary of what is self and not self all of the time. Do it all the time. Think back on your life, or even just a day, to see the many times your sense of self has changed from one role to another, from one perception to another. So it's really not static. It's really not static. It roams and shifts. It changes. It transforms. It changes. It contours. It shapes with its location. Sometimes it's expansive, sometimes it's closed, sometimes it's contracted, sometimes it's soft, sometimes it's armored. Sometimes it feels very, very, very small. Sometimes it feels really wide, very inclusive. And again, we can't say which one is true one. We can't say this. And again, this can sit, can land at different times and in different ways. You know, for me right now, just listening, speaking to myself, speaking is actually there's a sense of release. You know, in the fluidity, in the sense of different perceptions, and I don't have to take any one of them to fix me. So, and I hope that this is all still really makes sense of with your experience, you know, with the different boundaries of self, the different roles we find ourselves, the different mind states, how they shape a sense of self, how they all interact and play out with each other. And then we come to practice and we get the instructions like today of dropping, relaxing, releasing. You know, we are invited to enter a territory where something of this constant pushing and pulling and shaping and being shaped and reacting and impacting is actually coming to a, you know, we're getting in more quieter waters, we could say. So that we can actually also have a sense of subtler mind states. You know, one could say like anger and aversion. Of course, they can go from the very coarse and the very subtle actually. But, you know, where we actually get access to subtler mind states. Where to some extent, you know, this constant pushing and pulling is quietening down. The clinging is somehow relaxed, released for some time, you know. When Suvajjo offered the question today, is this moment good enough? I think it was. And some of you reported, you know, like this very questions. Something relaxes. Something is relaxing. There's some relinquishing of maybe a constant, ever so subtle, moment of striving, of struggle. And there's this moment of, oh. And with it, there comes a sense of well-being, of calmness, of spaciousness, maybe of clarity, of a light, that one feels lighter. So one could say we are again finding ourselves on a spectrum that goes to more and more subtle mind states. And for many of you, you know, this is territory you travel. So seeing that less clinging, there's more calm, there's more samadhi. There is a different sense of self, different senses of self. Not so much anymore bound up necessarily in narratives and images of views. But more, one could say there is a direct felt sense, you know, the sense of self can shift, become subtler, less fixed, less coarse, more spacious, more light. You know, we can see the joy and the beauty that's when the intensity, the solidity, the unquestionable isness of self becomes much more like it's thinning out, one could say. It's thinning out. Our perception becomes more refined. And the so-called self seems to become, with a refinement of the perception, becomes much more translucent, what is the word? Ephemeral. And this can be so nourishing, so beautiful, so liberating. And again, we cannot identify with it. So with the deepening of practice, we could say we travel a wider territory of how we perceive self, in a way it can become so subtle, hardly tangible. With it, real beauty, very often in the space that is in the lightness, what actually comes forth is qualities like compassion, kindness, and so forth. And it's really important that we know this, that we know them deeply, and that we know how to travel this spectrum more and more fluently. Knowing that wherever we find ourselves on the spectrum is still conditioned arising. There is no point where we can say, this is what I really am. This is who I really am. I'm really aware that I'm letting a lot out here, but it's the nature of the beast. Just want to have a moment of thinking what else to say. So in traveling, or in having an increasing fluently of traveling this spectrum, what comes with it, I think, is that even when we find ourselves stuck in the most painful, limiting places, what can be so helpful to remember ourselves even in the midst of it, rather than making it, it's either this or that, you know, again creating a polarity, to really know in the midst of it, and I know this other is also possible for me, it's also accessible. And right now, what I can do is, first of all, to see that I'm stuck, maybe. And sometimes, you know, we are really so in it that we actually can't do a lot about it. You know, we just have to really ride the wave. But what can then, you know, when the height, so to say, when the wave is peaked and come a little bit down, and there is a little bit more space, there is a little bit more malleability, you know, then we can ask ourselves, you know, what is right now helpful? What is right now helpful to allow myself to open, to soften, to take some of the painfulness out of the situation? You know, and then it's something we explore, we discover in our practice. And what we can always be sure, what will soften, what will open, what will lighten, what will shift something, are qualities of the heart like kindness and compassion, joy, gratitude. You know, they're very, very presence, they're very, very presence coming into the, let's say, into the mandala of the situation will already soften. And this is one of the reasons why it's so helpful. You know, when you hear a thing, I think I said it several times today, it's like, you know, it can sound a little bit trite. Can you hold it in compassion? It's like, can you hold it in compassion? You know, so it can become a little bit meaningless, but actually what it means, can you bring in a way of looking at the situation which will soften it, which will open it, which will actually take some of the suffering out of it? That's really what is invited here. Okay, I think I stop here. So thank you for your attention. Thank you for listening. We just have a moment or two of silence together.